Did you know Nerdtai is running a convention? That's right. From September 23rd through 25th at the Plaza Hotel and Suites in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, we're running the Nerdtai Expo. Tickets are still available right now. It's only $40 to pre-register, because you'll be at the door for a three-day pass. Pre-registration is almost up right now, too, so if you are fast and can get online, like, within a couple of hours of this posting, you can still pre-register, and that'd be cool, too. It's pretty awesome. This episode of Nerdtai is brought to you by listeners like you. Just go to GoFundMe.com/Nerdtai and help support us in our endeavors. We could really use your help. On this episode of Nerdtai, we are live at GeekCon 2016. And on this episode, we talk about Shatner almost apologizing for Star Trek V. Doug Liman has left the Gambit movie, but will now direct the Justice League Dark movie. Zendaya is actually playing Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man Homecoming. CWC announces Freedom Fighters The Ray, a new web series in the Arrowverse. And Wizard World Chicago almost let a gun dealer bend. What the hell, Wizard World? All this plus your letters and the sounds of people in the audience. This is Nerdtai! And welcome to Nerd and Tai.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Good morning.
How you doing? I'm one of your, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am one of your co-hosts, Trey Dorn. Joining me, as always, are the ineffable Fursters.
And I'm the only one actually wearing a tie up here right now.
And the long enduring Nick Azumi. There, I'll put my tie.
I can't help it that Dr. Light only gave me a scarf, all right?
Scarves helps, are tie-ish.
It helps not to put your tie over your headphone wire, just as a pro tip. Pro tip for audio producers, if you need to monitor yourself, take the headphones off, then put the tie on. If you've pre-tied it and are too lazy.
But it was too late.
That's helpful to 0.5% of the world's population. We really got that base covered.
It's very important. So, yeah, we are at GeekCon.
Yeah.
Exciting.
I love GeekCon. GeekCon's incredible. It was one of my first real conventions, and I'm excited to be here again.
I was at the first GeekCon. This is the 10th GeekCon. I was at the first GeekCon when it was a free convention in the Humanities Building at UW-Madison. And I went to the second one also when it was there as a vendor. The third one I did not go to because my sister had a wedding, but I've been coming ever since they moved to the Marriott, too. I missed the 1 year they were at a hotel that wasn't the Marriott.
I've only missed 1 year of GeekCon, and it was the first year. And it was because I was in South Dakota at another convention that shall not be named, but let's just say my experience.
I'll name it. It's SoganCon. That's the thing.
I was going to say, that's SoganCon, right?
Yeah, it was. It sure was a thing.
Is that still a thing?
I don't think it's still a thing.
Didn't they have that Kickstarter to save it a few years ago?
And they ran that year, but I don't know if it happened again.
Does anyone know?
If you know whether SoganCon still exists, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form and tell us.
Yeah, let us know if SoganCon is still a thing. Yeah, so I didn't go.
Probably
that
not.
I think South Dakota still exists.
In theory.
I think Richard Townsend was doing stuff with it for its later years, but I don't.
He's around here this weekend. I could ask him.
I think it's done.
I
don't want to like.
I think
like,
it's gone now.
Like, I'm really certain that the con doesn't exist anymore, but if it does exist, I don't want to be like the guy who like announced to the internet that this con that was still happening ended.
That'd be bad.
But yeah, I haven't missed a year since. I've been to the Humanities Building. I've been to the random hotel with the weird layout, and I've been here every year. So
it's neat.
I love GeekCon.
This might be one of the best con hotels
in Madison.
In Madison.
According to their Wikipedia, the last one was in 2013.
Oh, well, it's okay. So their Wikipedia page should not be taken as the authority on most recent events.
That's the only thing I could find because when I checked their website, just a bunch of random kanji.
Oh, Sogen Con. Sorry, you went back to Sogen Con.
Yeah, Sogen Con.
Yeah, I'm betting it's done.
if I was a gambling man,
I wouldn't drive to South Dakota either way. But
not worth it.
Anyways, we got a show
today. Speaking of unmitigated disasters, some of you may remember a little film called Star Trek V.
Oh, that was
so sorry if you remember it very well.
It is by far the it's considered to be the worst Star Trek film ever made. I think that's like it makes Into Darkness look like Citizen Kane.
I mean, Insurrection wasn't great, but.
Insurrection was at least entertaining.
Yeah.
And didn't have Spock's crazy half-brother trying to find God at the center of the galaxy. But not the actual center of the galaxy, because that would be impossible based on the physics of the universe, so they had to retcon the shit out of that.
Yeah, 5 wasn't good, is what we're saying. 5 was...
Are you saying that Bill Shatner directing a fan fiction about himself wouldn't turn out
well? But here's the thing, is that Star Trek V was directed by William Shatner. It's the one Star Trek movie he directed. And, okay, so...
Boy, does it show.
There are lots of things that were wrong with the movie, most notably that the studio kept trying to ask them to include more humor. Because Star Trek IV did amazing at the box office, and it was a very funny film, so they wanted Star Trek V to be just as funny, which included lots of dumb jokes like Scotty hitting his head and, like, dumb pratfalls, and, yeah, it was...
Everyone outside of Kirk in that movie is a completely useless dingus. Like, everyone. Everyone just turns into this, like, stumbling dingus of a person who betrays Kirk in one way or another... Because everyone in the movie is either betraying Kirk or they're, like, trying to calm their raging love of him and how great he is.
Yeah. So, William Shatner was doing an interview about a new project he's doing with Henry Winkler with Entertainment Weekly. And they did a part of the article where they talked about bad things, except... Where they're supposed to be, like, apologizing for bad projects they were involved with. And he apologized, in quotes, for Star Trek V, in which he blamed the studio not having someone teach him how to budget a movie. Like, he still managed to blame the studio for it. Like, I didn't budget that movie well because no one told me. And he thinks it's a bad movie because it didn't have the full ending he wanted to do with the rock monsters.
Guys, I saw how Noah turned out. Rock monsters don't make a good movie.
So rock monsters are, like, it's actually a really legend thing where they tried to actually start doing it and they could afford to build, like, one and it looked terrible. But it's like Kirk was going to get in a fist fight with rock monsters at the end of the movie. I don't know if you saw Galaxy Quest, but they kind of did better. But Shatner, like, apologized. Like, I think he completely misunderstood, like, why Star Trek V was bad. There are only two good things that came out of Star Trek V, and they are, one, the line, "What does God need with a starship?" Yeah. And, this.
No.
What?
No.
Why would I do this?
Why are we doing this to the listeners?
Captain Kirk is climbing a mountain. Why is he climbing a mountain? Captain Kirk is climbing a mountain. Why is he climbing a mountain? Captain Kirk is climbing a mountain. Why is he?
This isn't going on YouTube, so I can play this.
Is climbing a mountain. Why is he climbing a mountain? To hug the mountain. That mountain hug the mountain.
If you're not familiar with Shatner of the Mountain, Google Shatner of the Mountain.
That mountain.
By Fall on Your Sword.
He wants to make love to the mountain.
And he didn't apologize for this?
No. Well, he just did the interview for the special features.
To be fair, the Galileo shuttle redesign is actually pretty cool. If we're going to say good things from
Yeah, and Star Trek... I just turned down my own mic instead of Shatner of the Mount. I think my brain had a priority. The Galileo shuttle that they built, which they actually lifted off the ground and dropped for the landing, they like it, it. That is a cool prop, and it was repurposed as the Next Generation shuttle.
With good reason. It's a legitimately awesome looking.
With good reason. Star Trek: The Next Generation had limited budgets, and here's a full size shuttle some idiot built.
I'm just saying, like, I hate Star Trek V, so I'm gonna give credit where credit is due. That's really the only thing I can give. Like, every time I think about that movie, the only scene that ever comes to mind is when they introduce the Klingons and you have them, like, just losing their minds over the fact that the Enterprise is around. That's Kirk's ship! If we defeat Kirk, then we'll be the greatest Kirk fighters ever to fight Kirk! Like, I mean, I don't think William Shatner pleasuring himself.
Kirk Fighters is the name of my Klingon language cover band. We do mostly songs by The Who.
I'm just saying, like, I don't think you could have a more apt metaphor for William Shatner just pleasuring himself than watching that movie, because that's what it is. That's what it freaking is.
Why does he climb the mountain?
He wants to make love to the mountain.
He wants to hug the mountain.
Envelop.
I mean,
that mountain.
Thankfully, it wasn't so bad that we didn't get the Undiscovered Country.
Oh, thank God for that.
It was profitable enough. Well, it's Undiscovered Country is the greatest thing in the frickin' world. It's the best Star Trek movie ever made.
I just did a video about it. It's great.
I'd say second. I mean,
What Star Trek movie is better than six?
I'm a The Next Generation guy, so I really liked First Contact.
First Contact was good, but it wasn't Undiscovered Country. Undiscovered Country had such emotional depth.
Yeah. First Contact also suffers of the fact that, like, a bunch of the stuff Picard goes through in that movie, he had, in theory, already resolved in the TV series, so they just kind of took him a step back.
Yeah, like in the episode, the season 4 episode, where he goes back to France.
Yeah, after the follow-up.
You know, that whole family that gets killed off in generations in a line of dialogue.
Yeah.
Watch that episode of Next Generation where Picard goes and visits his family in France, and then think to yourself, all these people are going to die screaming in a fire off screen.
Yeah.
Awful.
Even that kid, he's so cute, he going to die.
Yeah, but if no one's around to hear it.
I was just saying, like even some of the Borg stuff he's going through in that movie, though, like, they had resolved in a much more subtle scene in the TV series, and then suddenly in this movie he's taken back a few pages and he's smashing his office.
I think it's okay to say
and
that.
And we draw the line here!
I think it's okay to say that, like, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's not, like, it can't be, like,
oh, no, it's,
completely resolved.
We're not going to debate that First Contact is a bad movie. I love First Contact.
No,
it's a great
I love
movie.
It, too.
Also, is there a better scene in the history of movies than James Cromwell, like, frickin' turning on Magic Carpet Ride and riding off into the sunset? That's a great scene.
It's a great scene.
It's one of my favorite scenes in film.
I argue that the Kirk's fist fight with himself in Star Trek VI, and when he goes, I can't believe I kissed you, and his double says, it was your greatest dream, or something like that.
Yeah.
Fair.
I'm saying... Anyway, Star Trek V is bad. William Shatner should feel sorry, but he doesn't feel sorry about the right things.
Which is kind of standard operating procedure for Shatner, really.
Speaking of directorial messes. Right?
This
is
could
that
be
a
good thing.
It's technically a mess involving a director.
It is, yeah. So, boy, the Gambit movie has hit some rough spots the past 2 years. Of course, it was originally announced that Back in 2014 was when the Gambit movie was officially announced. It was going to be Channing Tatum was going to be in it.
Supposed to be out already.
It was supposed to be out at this point. It was supposed to have wrapped up filming last year. With Rupert Wyatt was supposed to direct it last June. It was supposed to be out early 2016, starring Channing Tatum. Of course, over the past 2 years, that has completely fallen apart. Channing Tatum departed from the project.
And then he came back.
Rupert Wyatt left the project. And it's just kind of sat in limbo.
Well, no, and then last fall, Doug Liman got hired to direct. And it was supposed to bring in production early this year. In March.
And that's probably not going to happen now. Because Doug Liman has officially left the project. He's no longer directing because he's going to be directing DC's Justice League Dark.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say because, but...
It's, I mean, he got signed. He left the project.
He quit because they kept delaying crap.
Yeah, he quit and has signed on to direct Justice League Dark.
Well, we should call it by its proper name of Dark Universe.
Dark Universe is what the original story, Variety broke the story and called it Dark Universe in the story. It's not an official name from DC yet.
But it's pretty certain it's going to be, because that's the, Dark Universe was originally, his original script written by Guillermo del Toro, who's originally attached to it, but he had to depart the project because of other, you know, commitments. And the script they're using for Dark Universe is still they're doing some rewrites because they, you know, have to adapt it for the DCEU, and so there's another screenwriter who's being brought in to adapt it. But they're starting with the base of Guillermo del Toro's script.
Yeah,
and it's killing me because once again Guillermo del Toro was this close to doing a Swamp Thing movie and it didn't happen again.
Well, and that's just it. Like, despite the fact that Justice League Dark or Dark Universe or whatever you want to call it, despite the fact that that's been in the pipes for however many years.
Well, I also want to separate because there's an animated feature of Justice League Dark.
With
Matt Ryan.
We don't really know much about the project yet other than it's going to have some elements of Del Toro's original script. Doug Liman is – I mean, we don't even know who's all going to be in it.
Well, we know which characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Constantine, Swamp Thing, Zatanna.
They haven't cast or anything.
Right. Yet. But, you know, we don't know who the new Constantine's going to be. I say Keanu Reeves again. Give the guy another shot.
No, absolutely not.
You know Matt Ryan's going to be doing everything he can to keep that role. That role from his cold, dead hands.
I say that there's no way that Matt Ryan plays the part because it would be too confusing of a character.
Yeah, because he's already in the Arrowverse. So.
Yeah, and with a live-action version, it would be confusing to audiences that it wasn't in continuity with any of his earlier performances. Like, you can do that with an animated version because there's a clear separation with the animation, but, you couldn't drop that actor into a live-action film and not, make it be assumed to be part of the same thing.
Sure.
I have really mixed.
Let's just beat up on Fur now.
Well, taking away from beating up on Fur, I have really mixed feelings about this project because, as regular listeners know, I have a huge soft spot for the magic realms of the DC universe. I absolutely love Hellblazer. I love Swamp Thing. They're two of my favorite comics of all time. Love Zatanna. Love Etrigan. There's two things that bother me about it, and the first one is. This is honestly just lending more to what I've said in previous episodes of I just feel like DC doesn't know what they're doing. Because, again, their docket for what movies are going to be in their DCEU changes every year. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to be working on this, this, and this. And then suddenly projects start disappearing and projects start getting added left and right. So
Marvel was like that early on.
That's true.
Let's take a look at the Runaways movie that was supposed to happen originally. Mm-hmm. That would have come out almost immediately following the Avengers, and then it got shelved. And actually, I mean, it's been it's not on the docket here, but Runaways is being brought back as a Hulu original series.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone gets a Marvel show, you get a Marvel show, your network gets a Marvel show, Freeform gets a Marvel show, Netflix, you get six Marvel shows.
So I'm a little bit concerned on that end. And, yeah, I'm sad that the Del Toro connection isn't going to be as much there. Because, again, Del Toro himself has said that he wants to do a movie with Swamp Thing so bad. And seeing Swamp Thing in a good movie has been my dream for the longest time. So, if Zack Snyder gets his grimy hands on this movie, there will be hell to pay. There will be hell blazers to pay, actually.
That's what's actually kind of worrisome about this, because originally Justice League Dark, when Del Toro was supposed to be directing it and writing it, it was supposed to be a standalone movie.
The universe wasn't connected for the longest time.
It was supposed to be its own thing. So a lot of the rewrites are going to be connecting it to, the Suicide Squad, Justice League, all of that.
Right, well, I mean, because Zatanna, though, was classic DC.
Yeah.
At least out of the characters that they're using. And what Etrigan the Demon, what is he?
Etrigan, he's kind of in and out of classic DC.
Yeah.
That was the problem, was in the mid-80s, they tried separating the the Vertigo line characters from main DC, which is really weird because in the set, in really the books that set up the Vertigo universe, which was Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
Swamp Thing is very rooted, pun totally not intended, in the DC universe. The Justice League show up. Zatanna's a regular character. John Constantine interacts with several Justice League members, and he and Zatanna used to date. I mean, like, it's very, very heavily in there, and then just suddenly they just drew a line somewhere during Sandman, which also had several mainstay DC crossovers, where they're like, oh no, this isn't in the DC universe anymore, it's separate. So, I guess it's more of DC never having their crap together.
Well, to be fair, though, DC used to have a multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can say that that was the, you know, prior to the coalescence of everything.
But Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, when around the time that he met John Constantine, was the Crisis on Infinite Earth, so there wasn't a multiverse anymore.
Mother lover.
Do you guys?
No, it was a major plot point, was the Brujeria were active during the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
They've rebooted that stupid universe so many times.
They were active during the Crisis on Infinite Earths because while the Earths were being rearranged, the heavens were also being rearranged. So while the Justice League was worried about protecting Earth, the Brujeria was going to invade heaven. Alan Moore's Swamp Thing run was crazy.
Do you guys, kind of to change the subject a little bit, kind of to go back with like the DC Expanded Universe and whatnot, do you guys think maybe... I mean, like, there's a huge difference between Marvel's cinematic universe and the DCEU, and that do you think maybe DC is trying too much of the opposite of what Marvel is doing? Marvel has this very systematic setup where they're introducing characters in their own films, usually before the big meetup films.
Well, they kind of
DC, I mean, they're throwing like Suicide Squad out, and then they're throwing out a Justice League movie before, like, The Flash gets his own movie and before Aquaman's getting his own movie. And now this huge group movie of Dark Universe is getting... Like, do you think that maybe
DC
trying too hard to be like, we need to get as many characters out there as we can to catch up to Marvel before setting this up?
Well, they desperately want a franchise. They definitely want a franchise.
It's like they want to be the opposite, but they also want to copy everything Marvel does.
Yeah. You know what it is? I don't know if I'd group Dark Universe in with it, only because it is a set of... Well, I mean... Yeah.
Like, I mean, like when you're universe building, why would your priority even be, well, we have to set up the Justice League, so we better get the Suicide Squad in here ASAP.
Well, I mean, Suicide Squad... Like, the annoying thing about Suicide Squad is that you could have done a fantastic movie with this set of characters with, like, minimal backstory on all of them and just been, like... There are so many, like, you know, whether it be, you know, the ragtag team going in to pursue X mission is such a classic thing. Like, you know, whether it be... You know, I'm obviously... It's very different, like, Kelly's Heroes or, you know, The Dirty Dozen, yeah.
Seven Samurai...
Right.
And
you could have just done that. And, I mean, honestly, I think they went this weird scale with the, like, I do think they could have, with the plot of Suicide Squad, come up with a good movie, but it would have required shooting, like, 10 things they didn't shoot, including, like, building up Sorceress as a villain early in the movie. And, like, but that's unimportant. And I could spend an hour dissecting about everything wrong with Suicide Squad and how it could have been done right with even the same stupid plot. But I go back to, like, how Arrow handled the Suicide Squad, where they had them going on a simple, like, hostage mission. And, like, just going on a simple hostage mission was somewhat important because most of the people, I mean, like, yeah, Killer Croc has, you know, is his super strength and can swim underwater. But, like, Harley Quinn... Like, well, I mean, besides the fact she was underused because she's a person on the team because she's a brilliant, like, psychiatrist and profiler, but we gave her a baseball bat and she's going to hit shit.
You know, the sad thing is there was a straight-to-video animated movie, Batman Assault on Arkham, which was, despite saying Batman in the title, was a Suicide Squad movie.
Yeah.
It has almost the same cast and a way better plot.
See, and I thought
they actually have Harley's psychology background come into play.
Like, that's the only reason she's useful for the team, because she doesn't have any superpowers. Like, being, you know... capable of being violent isn't a superpower. Like, you can grab five guys off the street.
Well, especially when it's like we have to find a team to make up for the fact that we lost Superman. So you got the clown chick with the baseball bat.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, like, but really, let's be honest about the real reason. Are any of those five guys you pull off the street going to look that good in a miniskirt? I mean, that's
I argue that Jack Courtney has wonderful legs. And again, as I discovered watching Jack Terminator Courtney Genesis, he is not Michael movie. Rosenbaum. I watched Divergent the whole time thinking that was Michael Rosenbaum.
You're the only one that watched Divergent.
How did Jack Courtney end up being one of the good parts of that movie?
Jack Courtney's great in that movie.
I know. That's what's upsetting to me.
And the best scene does involve Jack Courtney, but it's Ezra Miller.
Oh yeah.
Ezra Miller's cameo. You know, but here's the thing with Ezra Miller playing the Flash. I don't know if I can accept a brunette Barry Allen.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, Barry Allen's canonically blonde. All of his comic depictions, he's always got a shock of blonde hair. What is with all of these brunette guys playing Barry Allen? I mean, I'm in an upper. Grant Gustin, brown hair. Ezra Miller, dark hair. This is just not acceptable.
The Flash.
How stupid do I sound? Speaking of people sounding stupid.
The Flash TV show is the best argument against the idiots getting upset about this next story. A while back, we found out Zendaya was going to be in Spider-Man Homecoming. We didn't know who she was playing. We figured she'd be like some supporting character, maybe a new character. Who knew what they were going to do with her? Now, we basically have it confirmed. She's going to be Mary Jane Watson.
Woo!
This is awesome casting!
Because she looks like someone who might be from Queens, and unlike prior actresses who have played the part, she actually can do all the things that Mary Jane Watson's supposed to be able to do, include dance and sing.
Yeah, you know, the skills she's supposed to have. She looks about the right age, much like Tom Holland. All these, but of course, as soon as this casting announcement was made, people lost their freaking minds.
Let's be more accurate here. White people lost their freaking minds.
White people
lost their freaking minds.
I can't believe. I know. Like, how many stories have we done on this? How are people still losing? How are people still getting upset over this? Oh no, she's not playing.
I like the people who complain, but she's not a redhead. First off,
too bad we can't find her a wig or something.
Or who? Like, well, and then people said, well, they could dye her hair, and then, well, that's not the same. Kirsten Dunst is not a ginger.
Hate to break this to you guys.
The girl from Divergent who got cast in the role and completely cut from Spider-Man 2 is not redhead either. They dyed her hair for that. She's also mixed race, but people don't know that because she can pass as white, and so everyone thinks she is, and they
are all
fine.
I'm mostly just shocked that they cut anything from Amazing Spider-Man 2. I thought just everything was on the board. I can't believe we're still having this conversation, though. I mean, especially, like, you brought up the Flash tray, and that is, like, one of the best examples of a show where almost none of the main characters look how the comic book says they're supposed to.
Yeah.
The West family are a bunch of pale gingers in the comic, and in the show, each and every one of them, African-Americans. And, you know,
Barry Allen is a skinny son of a bitch with brown hair. He is a wire-thin dude. I have never seen the Flash drawn like that in the history of comics.
And despite that, you know,
Wally West sometimes got drawn thinner.
It's not even, and I shouldn't even say despite that, it's just, that's probably the best comic book-based TV show anywhere. It doesn't matter if they look like the comic character, if they're good actors and they can play the character,
Stephen
they
Amell.
Play the damn character.
Stephen Amell doesn't look like Oliver Queen remotely.
but he's
kindly old man with a beard.
Mm. But he defines the Green Arrow for an entire generation.
I know, and he's great. It's like
he's also ripped.
I mean, like, and none of these people were complaining when Sin was cast as a white woman in Arrow.
Oh yeah.
None of these people were complaining about
Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. No. It's. I mean. Well, some of us were complaining.
Of us were complaining that none of them were complaining that Ra's al Ghul was a white dude in the TV show. No one got upset about that except for us.
Yeah.
But
I think there's like a point.
I got really mad about Batman Begins casting of Ra's al Ghul because as much as I love Liam Neeson, guy's got an Arabic name.
Well,
he's not fucking
Irish. And that's
great.
I think and that's
they couldn't even pronounce it right.
And that's I think and
that
that's
movie
exactly
was
it.
Double racist,
I think,
because they tried to trick you that Ra's al Ghul was an Asian guy first. Like, it's Arabic.
Like, and the sad part is that's still the best of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
What I think is it's okay to be upset about that, because you know you look at a character like Ra's.
Well, right now,
he's very clearly Middle Eastern.
That's supposed to be.
Right,
you should be upset.
But
when
these guys didn't get upset. That's the thing.
Yeah, these guys didn't care.
I mean, whitewashing is different than recasting with a person of color because of power dynamics and institutional racism, folks. We could all go through a class to the other, but we're not, because
what I think is really cool about
we're not a bunch of fuckheads.
What I think is really cool about Zendaya playing Mary Jane is that we're seeing this more and more in films, and I think a lot of it has to do with like the success of like John Boyega in Star Wars and Force Awakens, where you're getting characters that aren't being cast based on the color of their skin. You're getting characters cast on how well people can play them. Like, if you're not looking at it in a way that, oh, this character has to be black or this character has to be white.
Mostly,
they're just casting actors, which is great.
Straight white dudes aren't used to having people who don't look like them in the leads.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. And it's – so one of the weirdest criticisms I saw was like, oh, you know, I don't have a problem because Zendaya isn't white. I have a problem because it's not comics accurate. And I'm just like, so you complained about Hugh Jackman being cast as Wolverine? Because Wolverine's supposed to be like 5'3". Hugh Jackman's like 6'2".
None of you care that Marissa Tomei, you know, Aunt May, is like way, way, way younger than
Aunt May has ever been.
I'm
still a little bothered by that casting, because I should never be able to think that Aunt May is hot. It's wrong.
Unless you're Doc Ock.
She's a wonderful Academy Award winning actress, and I'm sure she'll do a great job. I loved her scene in Civil War. Like, I'm fine with the casting, but it is a little bit of a quandary in my back of my brain.
It's just so silly. I mean, like you point out, Trey, it's Queens. That's like the most diverse neighborhood in America. It would make more sense for Peter to not go to a school that aren't just a bunch of white people that all look like they're 30.
I've argued.
I mean,
you know, it's.
I have problems with that movie.
I argued again that, like, I don't think that Peter Parker needs to be white, but, you know,
yeah,
Sony
agreed.
Insisted that Peter Parker be white in the MCU reboot. Yeah.
It's weird because Stan Lee also has insisted on that, but he's fine with the Zendaya casting.
Yeah, no,
which is good.
Stan Lee has
good,
like, come out
God.
In support of Zendaya's casting. So,
well, I mean, we are getting Donald Glover in Homecoming, so we are probably going to see Miles Morales. Potentially.
I don't know if we're. I don't want to make that
playing
assumption.
The character.
There's no because Miles. I mean,
have they announced who?
Yeah, but no. But the whole
playing?
Point is that Miles Morales is supposed to be a younger character than Peter Parker.
You would never mistake Donald Glover for younger than Tom Holland.
Right. Honestly, I could see Donald Glover playing an adult Peter Parker, but I can't really see him as Miles Morales.
No, yeah. I couldn't either. It wouldn't.
Even though he's voiced Miles.
He voiced
Morales.
Him, and it was really good. But I mean, that was in a cartoon. You know?
Right. It's just his physicality. He's way too old to play.
He can voice a 13-year-old. He can't look like him.
Play an adult Miles Morales, but that hasn't happened yet in the comics, so there's nothing to base that off of. But I think he'd be. I still stand by, and first off, I'm a big fan of adult Peter Parker.
Agreed.
Like, Peter Parker, like, I grew up reading Marvel Comics in the 90s, and so my Peter Parker was a married adult with a job. So, like that was my Peter Parker. And so, like, that's the Spider-Man I want to watch in a movie. And they never get there. Like, they kind of got
that
in the ballpark.
Tobey Maguire.
But like, he was never the established adult.
Yeah.
But that was in Spider-Man 3 when there was nothing adult happening about that movie.
Right, like, so that's why
that double hurt because I mean it hurt from Trey's perspective of, you know, wanting mature adult Peter Parker, and it hurt from my perspective because my favorite Spider-Man issue from the 90s was Spectacular Spider-Man 600, which is not just adult Peter Parker, but it is the culmination of the Harry Osborn Green Goblin storyline, which got crapped on.
Yeah, seriously, like, I really thought the trilogy should have just been like a Harry Osborn Green Goblin villain in the third movie.
That's what they were building up for, and yeah. and to make him a side character in what should have been his moment
yeah.
was hard. Because if they would have just adapted Spectacular Spider-Man 600 for the third movie, people would love that movie. I swear.
But it's okay.
I swear by that comic.
It's now had the character's been rebooted twice now. So since then. Oh, dear Lord.
Anyways, the moral of the story is, white people, we need to chill.
We need to... We need some happy news, and we're going to go to a strange place to that, and that is, of course, D.C. Wow. Who would have thought?
So it's safe to say. I mean, this is like a hot, fresh out the oven take right here. So get your oven mitts on, because this is a hot take. I argue that the DC television universe on the CW is better than the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or at least has been since 2012.
I don't know if I would say better, but I'd say it's on par.
They have been on point with how good they've been doing. Since Arrow premiered in 2012, we've gotten Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and now we're getting Supergirl.
And technically Constantine.
Yeah, Constantine got retconned into the continuity. We've had Vixen, the web series, and she's crossed over into the live action.
So it's been great. CW has been slaying it when it comes to television shows for superheroes. And
well, Greg Berlanti Productions, let's say that's because it's been on, besides CW, also CBS until now. Like, obviously Supergirl coming over, and then CW Seed, the online network.
And NBC. And
which is where this story takes us. It has been announced that CW Seed is adding yet another animated series. Of course, the Vixen is on CW Seed as well. They are adding Freedom Fighters The Ray to their lineup now. Which is cool and important.
That's what I thought.
but the thing is, it's a cool...
Who here knew who Vixen was before she got a show?
What about Justice League?
Two people. No.
But what's cool and important about The Ray getting a show is that we now have an openly gay superhero.
Well, okay, so I will say...
In the universe.
Here. I have a problem with how this was portrayed. I mean, with how this was described. He's not the first openly gay lead on a series because Sarah Lance on Legends of Tomorrow...
One of the main
is canonically bisexual. I mean, she's LGBTQ... Is one of the
have they leads on. Had her come out yet? Though on
several
that?
Times,
she's dated multiple women.
I haven't watched
Rachel
much of Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, like she like
no in Arrow even she
Arrow.
Was dating
yeah,
Rachel
oh, well, that's
Gould's
right.
Daughter.
It was the love of her life.
That's right.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, it was the motivating factor of pretty much everything Nyssa has done for the last three seasons. Actually,
And I think it's while I think it's really important that we have, you know, another LGBTQ lead. It's,
to say that's the
all
first
of these
is.
Headlines have been kind of like forgetting Sarah Lance,
which is a shame because honestly, like, of the Legends of Tomorrow characters, she's probably my fave. Frankly, I mean, it's been a toss up between her and Captain Cold. And so I'm down to her right now. So stay with me, Sarah.
Hey, thanks. Thanks to Flashpoint, Captain Cold will be back this season.
As a member of the Legion of Doom! They're actually calling it the Legion of Doom! And fingers crossed, come on, big skull-shaped fortress! Come on, big skull-shaped fortress!
I will say, I do think it's weird that on Legends of Tomorrow, the two really openly gay actors they had were both playing... Well, technically we don't know Captain Cold's sexuality, but, you know, the actor who... plays, you know, the Martin.
God,
and
just let him be at least bisexual.
Is
what? Sorry, nothing. Go
no,
on.
No,
sorry, thinking about Captain Cold there for a minute.
Well, no,
carry on.
No, I mean, I
God, Wentworth Miller's hot.
I mean, yeah, it's. I just don't know what, like, you know, they haven't had any sort of romantic direction at all for Captain Cold on the show. So.
Sorta with Sarah. Sorta.
Yeah, but it's hard to tell if that's romantic.
Yeah,
or...
that was a desperate situation.
Yeah,
But along with the
yes,
Ray,
we
though,
analyze everything.
So we're getting Ray. We're getting. I mean, we've had White Canary. We are like along with this though. We are this season's going to have a lot of diversity in it because Mr. Terrific might be coming into play in Arrow season 5.
Mr. Terrific's open.
Mr. Terrific
he's married. Yeah.
Yeah, he's openly gay on an Arrow, and he is going to suit up this season. So, yeah. I mean, I didn't count him because he wasn't the lead. Like, there's also there are gay characters on The Flash also, but they aren't lead heroes.
They
Legends of Tomorrow, Sarah Lance was one of the featured, like, this is one of the big characters we have.
With Flash, that was one of my favorites, just because of how they didn't try to go very special episode of how they're just like, Chief Detective Singh is gay, and everyone respects the shit out of that guy. Like, it made me so happy because no one questions it. No one, you know, is a jerk about it. It's just like, we have an openly gay police chief. And they don't even try to play that as controversial. They play him as a very supportive fiance, and I love that character.
All right, we should move on.
Yeah, we got to keep moving. So the Ray is coming out. CWC in 2017.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. So,
which is going to be a cool transition to the live action too when he eventually.
Yeah, because again, they're going to cast him with the intention to like they did.
With Vixen.
Like they do with Vixen, they're casting the actor to play the Ray based on the idea that he can also portray the character in live action. So
speaking of things that are terrible ideas as opposed to good ideas.
So we always like to do some convention coverage, and it's never a good thing when the words Wizard World show up in our show. not because they're always terrible, but because we only talk about them when they do something stupid. This time they just almost did something stupid. So some of you may be familiar with a little convention called Wizard World Chicago.
It's relatively new. It's up and coming.
You know, just like one of the biggest, like, actually it might be the biggest convention in the Midwest.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Yeah, it's, I'm trying to get this story up. But I can talk about this. So one of the things that, I'm going to talk around it until I can get details. But so one of the things that they do with their show is that some of their vendor booths are handled by a third-party contractor where they don't directly sell the tables themselves. And that's how you get things like roofing vendors sometimes and like random crap at Wizard World shows just filling the floor. And, this is completely down. Well, Wizard World Chicago, through a third-party vendor, accidentally sold a table to a gun dealer.
Yay!
More guns.
Like this, and this. Chicago. This story.
What's the worst that could happen?
All right, so the company DS Arms did arrange the booth, but they registered as a fan car. Now, I don't know about you, but a fan car to me usually means when people build like a replica of a famous movie car and then they buy a space to display it and then people can pay to take photos in it. Not firearms. And so I don't know about you, though, but like selling firearms at a convention seems like a generally bad idea. Mm-hmm. And apparently, so did Wizard World at first. So Wizard World at first was like, no, we're not letting them come. No way. And then it turned around and said, well, we're letting them come, but we're only letting them sell replica weapons. With a catalog to order from their local store to buy real guns. That you can have delivered to you right outside the convention.
In Chicago.
In Chicago.
In Chicago.
Yes. But and then like they kept flip-flopping, and then finally like it wasn't until the morning of the convention that Wizard World finally, like after saying the dealer was out, the dealer was in, the dealer was out, the dealer was in, finally confirmed the Thursday morning of this 4-day convention that they were not allowing the dealer on the property, as in it was still on their online map of the convention vendor room floor, but they finally booted him, and I'm just like, this is so. Crap, I was going to say they dodged a bullet, and I feel awful about myself, but I couldn't come up with a better metaphor. So, but
they didn't, Something about the cruise, I don't know. Something about the Wizard World cruise.
They did cancel that, too.
Yeah.
And we used the words dodge the bullet in that one, too.
Yeah, so the metaphor
stands.
But,
like, can you think of the precedent of setting up guns? Like, there are cons right now that are, like, banning realistic weapon props. There are cons right now that, like, thoroughly investigate anything that, like, looks remotely like a gun. There are, you know, and frankly,
and for good reason.
It's a big enough problem having sword dealers at cons. It's like that. That is a huge logistical issue where I'm not a huge, like, okay, so, like, I'm of two minds. Like, I thought sword dealers were really cool when I was, like, 17. But then the more conventions I ran, the more that, oh, my God, this is an awful idea. And so I'm of two minds on that because swords are cool. But, like, if some idiot with a sword, like, accidentally kills one guy, it's a lot less damage than some idiot with the gun bought at your convention. And this isn't, like, a gun show. Like, people, like, have said, oh, but gun shows do this all. People go to a gun show knowing they're going to a room where people are exclusively selling firearms and firearm-related paraphernalia.
If somebody says, if somebody decides to go off, anybody is within arm's reach of, like...
No one's there to get James Marsters interview. You know, autograph. You know what I mean? It's interview. Ah, sorry. I had a thought about there's another Wizard World thing that just kind of happened. I might mention after the story.
Did someone make him apologize for Dragon Ball Evolution?
No. No, it's not related to James Marsters.
Darn it!
Although, bleached hair comes into it. Anyways, like, that was cryptic.
For more, like, information, check out Nerd and Time.
Like, conventions are about entertainment. Conventions are about entertainment, the way things are taken at a convention are very different than, like, things are treated as playthings versus a gun show where things are treated as, these are fucking guns.
And 18
months. Well, yeah.
We already broke that once, Archimize.
Yeah, I'll have to put the explicit flag on iTunes. Anyways, this is...
See, it's always Trey that does that.
Brand Con puts us at, like, 11 at night when we do this show. GeekCon puts us at 10 in the morning. I do the same show.
Isn't it because usually they're like, Fur will be drinking, let's put it at night.
It's sometimes been very entertaining.
I'm running on no caffeine and one beef stick.
I had a nice breakfast and a frappuccino today.
All right. But so, good. Like, it's, like, as I was writing the story, like, I was writing the story as the gun dealer was coming. And then they can't, like, Wizard World finally reversed it. And I had to rewrite the whole article before I hit publish. It was fun and exciting. Did you know, so this is unrelated to this, but you know Wizard World Richmond is going to have Ryan Lochte as a guest.
And what?
Yes.
What?
We got the PR release. That's the bleached hair. See, people who watch the Olympics got the joke. None of you watch the Olympics.
Well, you could have said, like, swimming douchebag and been like, I got it.
I was trying to be cryptic. But Ryan Lochte will be a guest at Wizard World Richmond. He will be signing free autographs, taking free selfies. Actually free autographs, taking free selfies with people. They're going to charge for professional photos. And he will specifically not be doing any fan interviews or Q&As. I mean, besides the fact that an Olympic swimmer is a guest at a comic convention, which I'm very confused about to begin with.
It's probably a safe call not to have anybody
PR
ask him.
What PR firm thought, hey, we need to do some damage control for Ryan Lochte's image. Send him to Wizard World Richmond.
He's got to make some money now.
Speaking of train wrecks of humanity, we should move on to our mailbag.
Good segue. Yeah, let's do this.
And to be fair, I'm only talking about the ones who are in this room who wrote in. If you didn't write in your room, you're fine.
All right,
if you're
let's
in the room
this.
And you wrote in with a handwritten letter that you handed to us instead of using the form on the internet like we instruct you to, then your name is Archimize.
But let's read a letter from one of our regulars, Langland, first.
Can we get a big cheer for Langland?
Langland writes, "Hey guys, I just wanted to answer something from the last podcast. I know I didn't name the villains from Star Trek that I want to see in the Kelvin timeline. I thought Nick would answer it, considering he liked my Facebook comment.
I do what I want."
The answer is the Borg. I really, really like the Borg. They are my favorite bad guys in the series, and I want to see Kirk fight them. I was afraid to answer it because I once stated this on Twitter, and Trey got very opinionated. No, Trey doesn't do that. that's not something Trey does. And literally told me why he didn't want to see them, and this was when Into Darkness was still in theaters.
To be fair, I really didn't want to see them after Into Darkness.
But now they could. I think they could
well,
be inserted
I still don't like it because, well, first off, you'd have to explain how they got there from the Delta. The reason why they show up in the next gen from the Delta Quadrant is
because Q transported.
Threw them over there, and they were alerted about the Federation's existence, and that's why they came.
So you're saying Q should be in the next movie.
Yeah. I'd be okay with the Q continuum showing up in Star Trek.
So here's the thing. I don't want to see that as a movie, but I would love to see, like, a TV-length episode of the Kelvin timeline cast with Q. And there's no way to do that.
Can John DeLancey come back as Q? Like, I would totally love to see him reprise that.
That's the only way I'd want him.
Well, he's an interdimensional being. It wouldn't make sense to recast him, really.
I just like when he meets other Qs. Like, that's one of my favorite conversations in the next movie. How are you? Hello, Q!
We're going to let Langland continue his letter before I start talking about my full opinion about the Borg.
I developed a liking to the Borg from way back when I played Elite Force on Windows MEPC from way back in 2001. I was like 12 or 13.
That was like a Star Trek Voyager game.
I found the species to be quite scary and fascinating because they aren't motivated the same way classic bad guys like Klingons and Romulans are.
Instead, they're motivated like classic bad guys like the Cybermen.
They're Cybermen with a budget.
I honestly would like to see how Kirk would fight them. I also personally would like to see Spock get assimilated into the Collective, too.
Why? What is wrong with you?
Sure, you guys might not agree with me, but the reason I want to see that is because if Vulcan's logic doesn't quite work
with
Borg. I
have to stop the sentence there, because that's not true remotely. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one is exactly what the Borg are thinking, and that's like one of the core tenets of Vulcan logic. Vulcan logic is emotionally cold, and so by default, it cannot be, like, I mean,
the Vulcans are pretty close to being Borgs without the hive mind,
right, they don't want the hive mind part, but, like, frankly, once he's in the hive mind, I don't think it, like, it's the logic part of the Vulcan isn't the part that would be incompatible. It is the low-key compassion. That's how I describe Vulcans, they're low-key compassion, that they want to pretend they don't care, but yet they still show up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I also think it would be kind of cool to see Spock be the bad guy for half a movie, too. I also think it would be cool to see Kirk and his crew resort to using weaponry that isn't so reliant on science fictional technology. Perhaps they resort to melee weaponry like the katana that Hikaru Sulu wielded in the 2009 Star Trek movie.
Their personal shields would totally deflect the katana in 2 seconds.
I also think it could work out in a way that Borg enters this timeline through the same means that Spock Prime entered it.
But the Borg are in this timeline.
They're off in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, they're just far away.
Also,
it's easier to travel than it is to change universes in most science fiction settings, I'm just saying.
Also, it could very well quite possible in this timeline that Borg are much closer to Federation bases as well. Yes, no, they're still in the Delta Quadrant.
You need an explanation.
Yes, this is all my opinions. Once again, I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan out there. I've been more loyal to Star Wars, but I still like Star Trek enough. Please don't give me too much shit. Okay, that's all I got.
Okay, so let's go back to it. Like, you could, in theory, bring in the Borg. You could, in theory, come up with a plot-relevant way to bring in them as a villain. I don't hate the Borg. I think that it, like, I really wouldn't have wanted to see that after Into Darkness, because they had taken the universe to such a bleak place. And so that's why, like, I wouldn't have wanted to see it after that. Star Trek Beyond, which is the best Kelvin timeline movie out of the three, though, and, you know, has hope and has, like, it felt like Star Trek again. And so you can, after that, you know, reprieve in Star Trek Beyond, I think you can go dark again. I just wouldn't want two dark movies in a row. So that's why I didn't want any, like, that was one of my big problems with the Borg, if they'd appeared. I still don't want the Borg in more movies, because I feel like it was done really well in First Contact, and I really just don't want to see a movie that I've seen before again.
I have a caveat about First Contact, because like we said earlier in the episode, I like First Contact, but at the same time, honestly, that's the movie that ruined the Borg forever for me.
See,
By giving them a figurehead, by giving them someone you can talk to and reason with, the Borg Queen.
Yeah.
By giving them a figurehead who you can talk to and reason with and who will try to convince you of things, you have just taken away everything interesting about those characters. Because they're supposed to be the machine. You don't reason with them. You don't talk to them. You can try. It's not going to get you anywhere because they are the hive mind. They are the collective. By giving them a queen, now they're just...
I agree that it changes them. I agree that it changes the Borg, but and it makes them a slightly different villain. But I don't think it ruins them.
I find them way less interesting.
I think if you want to watch that villain, go watch some Cybermen.
Well, that's the other thing is that honestly, the Cybermen really here's where I'm going to really make some people angry with me. The Cybermen's best story was 10th Planet. And since then, it has been a consistent downhill slope with occasional peaks that
you don't
never
like
got as good.
Tomb of the Cybermen?
Tomb of the Cybermen is a great story. I love Tomb of the Cybermen, but I think 10th Planet's depiction, the way that they're written, is scarier. And okay. I don't think they've ever been as scary as they were in 10th Planet. 10th Planet was the last William Hartnell Doctor Who episode, for those who don't know. It was also the first Cyberman story.
Yeah. We're nerds.
So starting lag.
Thank you, Langland, for writing into us.
Yeah, so it's Langland. It's not that. Yeah, it's. I just don't want to see them in a movie again because I don't think that it's
going to
be.
First Contact kind of did it about as well as you're going to do
it.
Yeah, you're not. You can't really top that movie. It's a good movie.
And so it's not that I don't think that they can't be used well. It's just that in a film format with a single self-contained story, I think it's been done perfectly or as well as you're going to do it. And I'd rather just. I just don't. The only reason I don't want to see them is I want to see new stories.
All right. Our next letter is from the Random Ramblings Man.
Who also followed instructions and submitted the...
topic is, catching up isn't always fun. Top of the morning to you, nerds. Well, at least at the time I'm writing this. No, it's the morning.
It's
here
the
too.
Morning.
Yeah, it's
although,
morning.
Although, to be it's fair, we're not way, uploading this until Sunday night,
it's
so...
It's way to the morning right now. Hope you all had an enjoyable week, my friends. For my condolences on the end of Otaku Tonight. The recordings I watch never fail to fill me with laughter and joy.
Oh, well, thank you.
Aw.
It's going to be a tough one tonight, I think, but...
Hope the recording of your comedy album went off without a hitch, and
it
I'm
did.
Sure it'll be a knockout.
It did. It was a lot of fun.
It murdered six people. It didn't just knock them out.
Well, these past couple weeks have seen me, amongst other things, playing catch-up with the world of film and television, and I finally saw Star Trek Beyond, Suicide Squad, and at the time of this mailbag, the first four episodes of Netflix's Stranger Things. That's
God,
four
Stranger
more
Things
episodes
so
than
good.
I have.
I feel terrible because I haven't watched
so
it.
So good. Get on that.
It's like I keep meaning to. It's just that, like... Yeah.
It made me sad that it was only eight episodes because I was like, well, I don't have to work tomorrow. I'll stay up and watch, you know, I figured it was like going to be a 10 or 12 episode thing, and it got to the eighth episode. It's like, wait, this is a wrap-up episode?
There's going to be another season.
Oh, yeah, it's going to happen.
How does each of them fare?
Star Trek Beyond is amazing.
Yeah, the Star Trek Beyond might be my favorite movie this
Suicide
year.
Suicide Squad exists.
Well, seeing some people hyped up about Star Trek Beyond as either the best film in the reboot series or the best Trek film since the 90s, Beyond had a lot to live up to. I'm happy to say that I agreed with the hype. Beyond is probably the best Star Trek film I've laid eyes on in years.
You could technically say that even if you saw Into Darkness, because there were multiple years between films.
The villain in particular could have been a bit more fleshed out. Fleshing out that was spread evenly throughout the running time, but that's not enough to ruin Beyond for me. Definitely worth seeing if you haven't already. I want to say, actually, I think the villain in Beyond was the best villain we've done in these movies.
Yeah,
really,
no, I think he was since, really solid. Yeah,
yeah. Chang, really.
So this is my question to the audience: who here has seen Star Trek Beyond?
Raise
your hands if you have not seen Star Trek Beyond. After this panel, I want you to leave. Track down some theater in Madison still showing it and go watch it.
You guys, it's a 60 Star Trek episode with a budget. It's amazing.
It is both really... standalone yet includes so many continuity references that, like, if you don't know the full continuity of everything from Enterprise and the original series, you will still love it. But if you do know, you're going to get, like,
tons
so
of
much
Easter
texture
eggs.
And, like, depth. to the new universe.
Great writing, great acting, great story. The most satisfying conclusion that any Trek film has had in a very long time. Yes.
And yes, they do blow up the Enterprise again, which is stupid, but that's the only thing wrong with the movie.
I still heartily disagree because it's a heartbreaking and powerful scene, and it works. It works better than the stupid scene in Star Trek III. There, I said it.
I like the scene in Star Trek III. The real Star Trek III.
Anyway.
Yes, that's right. The Enterprise blows up in the third movie. Who would have thought? Right after Khan showed up in the second one.
Let's forget that that happened, though. I'd like to forget. That wasn't Khan. That was Benedict Cumberbatch, who was sleepy. Anyway. Suicide Squad, on the other hand, back to the letter. I went to see it in IMAX 4D, one of those special viewing formats meant to be more immersive as a movie-watching experience. The movie seats, bursts of water, sprayed scents, and flashing lights did nothing to alleviate the fact that I either wanted to fall asleep or yawned multiple times throughout the picture. Once again, the DC Extended Universe strikes out and establishes itself as a less-than-worthy competitor to the MCU.
Yeah, it's Suicide Squad again. It was better than Batman versus Superman in the way that, like, getting punched in the face is better than getting stabbed repeatedly in the abdomen.
I was about to say, Trace, that's like saying I'd rather get kicked in the shin than kicked in the junk. I mean, like, really?
I'd rather not get kicked.
Now on to Stranger Things.
That's not
Things.
An option for you, Archivize.
Tasers, Archivize. We're ordering them right now.
I'm ordering like a few zoomed in Tascam digital recorders. I'm ordering several tasers, and I'm getting some Tascam recorder shells to put tasers in. And we're gonna play taser or digital recorder. Archivize finds out.
Okay, now on to Stranger Things, which I may not finish watching by the time you get to reading this. So far, I'm enjoying the heck out of it. The plot is compelling, the acting ranges from great to solid, and the music is so wonderfully Carpenter-esque. I wish to see this show through to the end. Now, in the spirit of Columbo, what?
There's just one more thing!
Just one more thing, okay. I should have read the... I didn't.
You're not a Peter Falk fan, are you?
Actually, I would tell the story, but we don't have time.
Mrs. Columbo was played by Catherine Janeway.
That's nice. What is your present assessment of Star Wars Rebels Season 3 due to the premiere on September 24th? And how do you feel about the inclusion of Thrawn in the new canon and the involvement of Timothy Zahn in bringing Thrawn over from the Legends continuity? That's all for now. We were excited about it, but I don't think... Have any of us watched more than... I watched some of Season 1. Have either of you watched any of Star Wars Rebels?
I have not watched any of Star Wars Rebels.
Okay, so one of us has watched the first half of Season 1, and that's it. So it's way too early.
Timothy Zahn yelled at me once.
Did he tell you to get off his lawn?
No, I was working... So this is the 20th anniversary of the first time I worked a convention.
Yay!
Technically, it was a couple weeks ago, but this is the first kind of, like, I've been working conventions since Gen Con 1996. I was 15 years old. I was supposed to be 18-year-old to volunteer, but I was not because I was tall and had a large vocabulary and nobody questioned me. Anyways, so I'm manning a table and I'm in an information booth. I'm wearing a volunteer badge and suddenly this guy comes up to me and starts yelling at me about his hotel room and he's wearing a guest badge. And I don't know what's happening. But while he's yelling at me, I slowly look down and see the name on the badge is Timothy Zahn. I was a big fan of Timothy Zahn at the time. I actually had the Thrawn trilogy sitting in my bag on the floor that I was planning on trying to get autographed later that day. But he was yelling at me for like 10 minutes before he finally let me talk and get him to someone who could actually do something because I was a 15-year-old volunteer.
Aww. We still have things in the mailbag.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we got like 10 minutes, so we should get going. Thank you, Random Ramblings Man, for the letter.
Thank you, Random.
This letter comes from Archimize, and he handwrites.
Everybody look at Archimize. He's right there in the front row wearing his silly hat because I've never seen the top of that man's head.
And you never will.
He writes, "Dear nerds, ties, and live audiences, I hope GeekCon finds you well. Just a few quick questions today. What movies are you most looking forward to seeing on Netflix or on HBO for your preview weekend? We get Luke Cage on Netflix this month. We get the entire Jaws series, including Jaws the Revenge. We get Top Gun. Gallivant is coming to Netflix. If you haven't seen Gallivant yet, do that. It's unfortunately canceled, but both seasons are solid.
Nothing involving Tim Up, but said it's bad.
Yeah. What else? There's one other thing that I'm really excited about coming to Netflix. Supergirl. Supergirl is coming to Netflix in September, season one. So, yeah, those things are all pretty cool. Guys, yeah. Anything else?
Noah.
Is Noah coming to Netflix?
HBO free preview.
It's only worth watching on an HBO free preview, but if you ever want to see Noah team up with rock monsters and fight dudes.
Did William Shatner direct it?
He wants to hug that mountain. Trey, do you have anything on Netflix you're excited about?
I guess Luke Cage, that's coming up soon.
That's going to be badass. I can't wait for Luke Cage. Oh.
You know, I guess I'm still, like, I'm doing an Angel rewatch right now, so after...
You just finished your Buffy rewatch.
I did finish my Buffy rewatch. It eats you starting from your bottom. It's best line. And then, of course, you know, I just... finished the latest season of BoJack Horseman.
God, that show has more depressing than
that. And now everyone who's watched it gets to have the following song they can't sing aloud, and I won't sing the part. You cannot sing it out loud. Brat, brat, pew, pew. Pew.
This was the BoJack, incidentally, is one of my favorite TV shows right now. It might not be my absolute favorite, but it's in my top five.
Yeah, that last episode this season killed me. I mean, that was sad.
I don't know what it is about me that I love TV shows. I, as someone with depression, I should not watch so many TV shows that make me so sad, but BoJack is one of my favorite TV shows.
Also, how cool is it that, like, so, I don't know if this is really a spoiler for BoJack, but, like, I thought the way that Todd came out as asexual was, like, the coolest thing that I've ever seen on a television show.
Yeah, heck, that was so,
like,
good.
Well, so do you not like, well, no, I mean, I do, but not that way. Well, are you gay? No, I don't think I'm anything. Like, that was cool. Like, that was, that was awesome.
Todd is such
a great technically
character.
It's a spoiler because it happens in a later episode, but it's
happens
obvious
during
it's
the
entire,
end of
the...
Yeah,
yeah, it's really clear throughout his entire portrayal throughout the three seasons, yeah.
But it's really cool the way that he came out. Like, I thought that was really neat. And then second, what is your favorite cosplay at GeekCon so far?
Well, I love Nick Sailor Mercury. That he
that was great yesterday.
Douse yourself this in water and repent.
This Frank West right here is pretty damn cool too. That's awesome. That's all for now. Have a great con, everyone. Archimize. Thanks,
a friend of mine who I didn't know was into Transformers until last week dressed as Swoop today, and she did a really good job. So that's my shout out.
All right, read your thing.
All right, one last letter. Also from Archimize. Dear Shameless Otaku.
God damn it.
Sorry to hear you couldn't make it to GeekCon. You are sorely missed. That Macross. That said, which Macross series do you like more, Frontier or Delta? I've been hearing good things about the latter, but I haven't had a chance to watch more. Also, I finally got Streets of Fire back from Nick, just FYI. Have a great one, Archimize.
That's amazing.
God damn it.
So we're not doing the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge this episode.
Why do you...
Archimize, explain
Pony
yourself.
Pony Express still exists. You can mail things to people. They have a service. It's called email, Archimize.
I don't have his email.
So for those of you who
you
aren't
don't
regular
need to go through a middleman anymore to contact somebody.
For those of you who are not regular listeners of the show, Archimize has been sending us letters to Shameless Otaku, who has only responded like once through our mailbag
for the past 5 months.
Yes. And he continues to do so. Because God is angry and hates us.
Good Lord.
Good Lord. All right, so we're not going to do the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge this episode, mostly because I'm using a real book for the current challenge, and I can't... If the challenge is guess what book I'm reading from, and I'm holding it in front of a room full of people,
it's not
a
challenge
kind of not
at that
a
point.
Challenge. But because we do say at the part of the Hall of Awesome is we will read the names aloud of the current members of the Hall of Awesome every regular episode, and this is a regular episode, the current members of the Hall of Awesome, which are people who have defeated the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge previously, are as follows. Arkham, Zero, Renan and Senti, Cheesy McDammy, Krista, Slitheredy, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, and the Minnesota Librarians.
Whom we haven't heard from for a long time, so they're probably hibernating.
I might have stumped them.
I can send some mail to
through us, though, right?
I hate you so much.
Shut up, Arkham Eyes.
So we literally have 3 minutes left.
Does anybody have any questions? Or would like to ask a mailbag question? You don't even need to come up anymore. You can just
yell it
yell
really
the
loud.
Question. Going once.
Are you going to forward my mail?
I'll forward you something. Anybody?
I don't know why I did that. That's disgusting. Why would I do that?
Azzy, you look like you have thoughts. Occasionally.
Plan for your cosplays for Nerd and Tie Expo from September 23rd through the 25th.
In Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Show hands.
Featuring a guest like Tiffany Grant, Linkara, cosplayer Helena Steele, Famicom Dojo co-host Sean Orange.
And two bands who will be coming. We just haven't announced them yet because they literally haven't sent me their info yet, despite saying, like, yeah, we'll be there.
So what's the best and worst thing about hosting?
All the phone numbers I get. I say, hey, I'm hosting a convention, and people just are like, oh, yeah, give me a call sometimes.
Yeah, people give you their cards, and you don't know who they are, and you take the cards, you say thank you, and you look them in the eye, and you're very sincere, and you even mean it when you say you will totally look up their stuff, and then you do 20 other things that weekend, and you forget. And then a week and a half later, you're kind of going through your bag, and you find all these cards, and you don't know, remember whose goes to who. Because, you know, you are tired and got given a card at 3 in the morning on a Saturday. And it happens, man.
The worst part is that you get less sleep than normal.
I think the worst part about running a first-year convention versus an established one, because this is not the first con. I'm a co-founder of No Brand Con. I'm no longer active with their – like, I'm no longer, like, a person – like, one of the main people behind it. I'm barely involved anymore.
Same except with Daisho Con.
Yeah. But, so I've done the first-year con before, but there's the nerve-wracking fear – that no one's going to come.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if you've sold pre-registrations. Like, the pre-reg people just aren't going to show up either. And it's just going to be me sitting there with empty rooms and Tiffany Grant looking sad. Like, that's the fear. So that's – but, like, you don't have that fear when you're doing a con that's happened before because you have an expectation. And so, the worst part is when your hotel decides that they're going to close 2 weeks after your convention. So you need to find a new hotel for the next year, which is better than finding out your hotel is going to close 3 weeks before your convention.
When you find out the hotel is going to close 3 weeks before the convention, that is arguably much scarier.
Yeah. Nick had to go through that once before. Because the Plaza Hotel and Suites where we're hosting our convention will be open and
until
we'll be fine.
3 weeks after.
But 3 weeks after our convention, they're closing and demolishing it because a hospital is being built on the site.
Another one in Eau Claire.
A block away from the other hospital.
Hospital number 5 in Eau Claire.
Right, Hospital Con. We could do the best Silent Hill photo shoots ever. Yes!
So I'd say that's the worst. I think that is all the time we have, though.
It is.
So let me cue up the
Let's
outro.
Close her down.
We love you guys, and we love being here at GeekCon. Thank you all so much for coming out. Remember, you can always subscribe to Nerd and Tie on Stitcher and iTunes and the Google Play Store. Please rate and review us in all of those places. Subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell everybody whether you like them or not. This is your new mission in life. I am, of course, Trey Dorn.
I am Professor Firsters.
And I am the guardian of wisdom and beauty, Nick Izumi.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of your GeekCon weekend.
And for all of you at home who weren't here, your life is unfortunate. But you can make it up by going to the Nerd and Tie Expo, September 23rd through 25th, and see us live there.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
A lot. We'll be hosting things,
exactly,
too, that aren't this show, besides doing this show. Nick, say your catchphrase.
Keep on Spocking in the free world.
Woo! Have a good night, everyone. Good
dance
weekend.
Party. I love you, Internet.